Chapter 1. The Inn. 10,000 years before the ancient civilization of Sumer rose to prominence in Mesopotamia, there were the Sagigar, or black-headed people, and they called their land Kurgal. I travelled among their people for a time, learned their ways, and found myself impressed by their absolute devotion to gods who did not care a whit about them. Wodanaz, the Wanderer. Namzu couldn't decide which was worse, the sight of death or the smell of it. Both assaulted his senses equally with disgust as he stared at the disfigured bodies lying on the floor from the doorway of the inn's second-story room. He gripped the magical light globe that he carried tighter, angling the illumination over the gruesome scene before him, scrutinizing every stark detail. There was blood spatter everywhere, the floors, the walls, even the ceiling. But the worst of it radiated from the remains in sticky crimson pools near where he stood. Taking a tentative step forward, he held his long wraparound skirt above his thin ankles, careful not to step in any of it. The sight of butchery on this scale in his city sickened him, especially since it had become so common of late. Namzu was the high priest of the judicial order in the city-state of Eridu, and he was not at all pleased to be at this inn again. "What have you determined so far?" he asked Sabum, the judicial priest first on the scene to investigate the murders. "They were a man and a woman from the territory of Larak, visiting Eridu for the creation of man ritual," Sabum replied shortly in his grave, resonating voice, while carefully navigating his way through the room. "Larak," Namzu mused to himself, "a city-state far to the north of Eridu." The priest-ruler of Eridu, whom everyone addressed as the Enn, could draw the faithful from the furthest reaches of the vast country they called Kurgal, and the people would come in droves. It was considered a spiritual pilgrimage to attend the creation of man ritual, dedicated to the creation god Enki, at least once in one's lifetime. "Looks like they were hacked to death in the night by a hatchet or knife." Sabum was leaning close over the bodies, inspecting every detail of the deep cut marks on the victim's flesh. "Perhaps both." Sabum, in contrast to Namzu, was a thickly muscled man, a little shorter, and moved with the grace of a cat. His head was clean-shaven with no beard, and a perpetually sullen expression that never seemed to change even when he was happy. Namzu had not known Sabum to be often happy. Namzu's gaze took in the rest of the room. Aside from the carnage of the bodies and the blood-saturated woven mats they lay upon, there was only a mud-brick table built into the wall with a bowl of water for washing and the couple's ostrich-skin travel bags. Nothing was unpacked. It appeared as if they had been murdered on their first night in the city. "What luck," he thought sarcastically. "Eridu is swelling with citizens from across Kurgal for the ritual, and every inn will be bursting at the seams." Namzu absently plotted a course through the room, frequently pausing to survey the slaughter from a different angle, his sandals sticking on unavoidable crimson droplets. "The opportunity to claim more victims over the next 12 days might be limitless for the killer, if we only knew what was driving this rage." His thoughts trailed off while he stroked his long, well-kept beard. "We don't even know if he, or they, is from the city," Sabum cautioned. "For all we know, the murderer could be here for the ritual, just like the multitudes of others. Maybe when the ceremonies are over, the problem will go away with it." Namzu shrugged.
"That may be true, but how many more will die in the meantime? Besides, the killer could just as well be from Eridu, targeting citizens from out of town."
Taking a linen cloth from inside the satchel that hung just across his chest, Namzu held it over his nose and mouth.
"Do they still have valuables like the others?"
Sabum delicately moved aside the layers of blood-soaked flax of one of the victims and located a money purse. It was tied closed, and he shifted it just enough to cause the metal bits inside to clink together dully. "It appears so."
"These are not murders that have been motivated by robbery. Unlike this couple, none of the other victims had been more than of average means."
Namzu glanced at the opposite wall.
"Besides, those marks left behind hint at something far more portentous."
He wished the symbols could speak, tell him what happened, Tell him who was responsible for these horrible deaths. Namzu stared hard over Sabam at the wall behind him, where the cryptic symbols were scrawled in the victim's own blood. Thin trails of crimson ran almost to the floor from the thick lines that formed the diagrams. Fresh when applied, were now nearly dry.
Whoever did this was an expert at killing. The most puzzling part are these writings on the wall. They may explain why the victims were struck with such fury so many times after the initial killing blows. If I could just decipher them.
Namzu hated puzzles, especially ones that he couldn't begin to unravel. There was nothing in his rather extensive experience to draw upon that could help him understand what he was seeing. Sabam ran a hand over his scalp. Maybe they were put there to distract from the true purpose of the murders.
Or maybe they reflect the true nature of the murders.
Namzu considered the symbols with as much concern as the bodies below them. The true nature?
Sabam sounded uncertain. Madness.
Sabam just grunted and continued to inspect the scene.
You are right about one thing, my friend.
Namzu spoke absently.
They are certainly a distraction.
Namzu had a sense of unease about the symbols, and the one who put them there, that he couldn't explain. He could shut down the inn, but would that stop the killer or killers if they were intent on continuing their grim spectacle? At least for now, the crimes appeared to be isolated to this inn, and few people in the city knew of their occurrence except through rumours. If he closed the inn, and the murders started taking place in back alleys and streets of Eridu, with disfigured corpses and strange scrawlings in blood for the full display of the public, it could cause a panic. That was the last thing he needed with the creation of man ritual commencing over the next 12 days. What is the inn planning this year to honour Enki?
Sabam's casual question seemed out of place as he studied the mutilated bodies.
Namzu marvelled at the man's excellent ability to compartmentalise his thoughts and emotions. In many ways, he was the perfect inspector.
Something entertaining, I'm sure. The story is the same every year. Yet N. Ipkyu Aya manages to come up with a new way to tell it that makes the telling sensational. How else could he draw the thousands he does for so many years now?
Sabam nodded silently and continued his work, moving his own light globe around the room for a better look at all the grisly details. The pools and splatters of blood on the floor and walls caused the small, windowless chamber to glitter crimson from the sticky reflections cast by the light globes they carried. The bodies and mats beneath them were so sodden with blood that it was nearly impossible to recognize the features of the victims. Then there was the unusual symbols drawn on the walls, which amplified the unnatural quality of the putrid display. Namzu suppressed a shudder at the haunting scene. Contemplating the horrific, Namzu considered that perhaps that was precisely what it was. A display, showcasing the terrifying and lurid nature of the violence that had occurred here, as with the others. He studied the scene more carefully from just inside the entrance of the room.
Based on the positions of the bodies and lack of any blood trails, it appears they died quickly and in their sleep.
Maybe, Sabam replied tentatively. There is a strange blood pattern near the base of the wall with the symbols that I can't explain yet, just like the others. Without the benefit of ventilation, the stench was nearly overwhelming. Namzu had to stop himself from gagging in front of Sabam more than once, even with the linen he pressed tightly against his nose. It was an unforgettable malodor that would linger in his senses long after he was away from it. He wondered how Sabam could endure the fetor standing in the middle of it all. Nothing seemed to bother Sabam. Namzu considered the murderer's motives to distract his mind from the foul odor. The heightened level of frenzied anger invested in the murders implied a crime of passion. But why would a presumably random couple visiting from another city-state incite this degree of fury? Unless it wasn't random, or it was deliberately random. He would also have to weigh the possibility that the rage had not been uncontrolled, after all. If it had been the ritual of a new death cult in Eridu, then the killings and symbols might be connected through some evil rite or sacrifice. He would keep that to himself for the time being. This was far from the usual homicide, if there was such a thing in Eridu. Namzu had only seen violence of this magnitude many years ago in the city-state of Shurapak, where he had started his career as an initiate priest of the judicial order. Even still, there was a significant difference as the murders in Shurapak were the result of insurrection and the lawless chaos that inevitably came with it, as opposed to what he was faced with presently, a presumed madman with a thirst for slaughter. Now he was the high priest of the judicial order in the greatest city-state in Kurgal, where never there had been a murder of this brutality. Until recently. Namzu was proud of his success in Eridu over the past few decades. No other city-state was so highly regarded as the safest in Kurgal, with harsh laws against crimes and a strong garrison of city guards that kept constant vigilance to ensure their citizens slept soundly at night. He conceded the rare occasion that a body would turn up in the Burununa River, dragged into the water by a crocodile, or a lone hunter mauled by a pack of wolves near the Satium Mountains to the east. In each of those cases, the kill was far cleaner than what had occurred here, and by animals following their natural instinct. Namzu was sure an animal was to blame here as well, but one of a far different sort. These two make 9 so far in this inn alone, you know. Sabum was holding one of the victim's blood-stained hands under the light to study it closer. I don't think I would recommend staying here.
This one has a dry sense of humour.
Namzu almost laughed out loud. He was right, though. There had been 7 murders of the same sort, and each time the victims were guests at this inn. And the innkeeper was hardly helpful. He was an odd fellow, and a bit confused about the details. Harmless enough, so far as Namzu knew, but that did not qualify him as innocent. If Namzu had learned anything in the turbulent city of Shurapak, it was that no one was ever as innocent as they claimed. Then he had a clever thought and turned to Sabum, nearly slipping in a patch of partially dried blood.
Send a man for an Anunnaki wise one at the Tower of Tongs,
Namzu ordered his second.
If anyone can identify the writings, they can.
Sabum nodded and left the room to pass along the order to one of the several guards standing further down the hall, keeping unwanted curiosity seekers away, before returning to assist Namzu a few moments later. Together they spent the next few hours inspecting the chamber, taking notes of every detail while Namzu drew copies of the symbols on a clay tablet. It was puzzling, thought Namzu, how consistent each scene and circumstance was for seemingly random murders, and senseless. There was never any witnesses, nothing valuable was ever taken. The victims were slaughtered with blades, and there was always strange symbols left behind on the walls. The symbols themselves varied from one victim to the next, and sometimes they repeated, but without understanding what they meant, Namzu was at a loss as to how they fit. That left him with only the innkeeper and his inn as the last common elements of the murders. Namzu spoke partially to himself as much as Sabum from the doorway.
I think we should talk more with this innkeeper. It's strange that all the murders have taken place under his roof, yet he never knows anything about them. We will have to put him to more rigorous questioning to clarify his memory. All he's told us is that there have been no unusual visitors or guests staying at the same time as all the murders, and no new staff in the kitchen.
He pulled at his long braided beard distractedly.
Every time one of our inspectors has spoken with him, they report the innkeeper's unusual lack of concern for the victims, or that they had died horribly in his establishment. Something is not right with him.
Acting on a gut feeling, Namzu called a pair of guards standing watch outside the room to detain the innkeeper until he and Sabum had a chance to question him further. The guards left with a purpose down the stairs and towards the kitchen. Minutes passed while he continued to examine the room for anything they had missed. Then there was a violent commotion downstairs, followed by the screams of men in pain that echoed through the halls of the once quiet inn. Namzu rushed down the stairs towards the kitchen, with Sabum only a step behind, following the noise of breaking pottery and the skid of tables. The two guards sent to detain the innkeeper were on the floor,
blood pooling around their twitching bodies just inside the kitchen. Their screams had drawn the attention of other guards stationed nearby in the common room, and now four of them were cautiously closing in on the cornered innkeeper. The innkeeper, thick-limbed and tall for a native of Kurgal, was in a blind rage. He screamed words at the guards in a tongue that didn't sound human, and expertly spun his blades, lashing out at the approaching guards. By the time Namzu and Sabum were close enough to do anything, another guard was on the floor, twitching from a swift, slicing blow to his throat. Namzu had seen enough. He waved his arms in a deliberate pattern and wove a spell of paralysis that rendered the blades silent. Then the remaining guards rushed in and beat the man until he no longer moved. They had watched three of their comrades die in a space of just a few seconds and were eager to exact retribution on the deadly butcher. Namzu didn't care if the man lived or died, only that the savagery was over and the culprit was incapable of causing violence again, especially if this was the man who had been responsible for all the murders at the inn.
"Is he alive?"
Namzu asked one of the guards kneeling over the bloodied body of the innkeeper.
"I cannot feel his breath, First Ushgadi,"
the guard replied, using Namzu's formal title. Ushgadi was the name of the sect of priests responsible for investigating crimes and passing judgment in the determination of innocence or guilt, and Namzu was their leader, or first among them. The guard proceeded to check the innkeeper's clothing for anything unusual.
"I believe he is dead, or close enough to it."
Sabum stood behind the still-kneeling guard and brought his club to bear against the innkeeper's skull, sending the guard reeling backward with a cry of surprise. For his part, the innkeeper did not stir, but a new trickle of blood ran down the side of his head. Namzu shrugged it off as just another injury added to the many welts and bruises inflicted already.
"He seems dead enough to me," Sabum remarked,
wiping his club on the innkeeper's clothing.
"Take him to the hall of Kernagia,"
Namzu ordered the guard, and then he turned to Sabum.
"Inform the Sangha of what has happened, and suggest mania or insanity as the cause."
The Sangha was second only to the N in Eridu, and he would most certainly want to visit the body of the innkeeper in the hall of Kernagia, where bodies were purified after death, to ensure that no trouble would come from it. In Namzu's experience, it was possible the innkeeper might be a continued threat if he had been driven to madness by disease or sickness that was infectious. The Sangha would work that out. A short time later, Namzu's attention was drawn beyond the broken door leading to the kitchen and watched as a tall, thin man entered the inn with the guard that Sabum had sent to the Tower of Tongs. Those who were seated in the dining room, mostly guards and other Ushgadi, nearly leapt to their feet and bowed to him in respect. He was the Anunnaki, and more than that, he was a revered wise one. Wearing long layered robes in shades of yellow that flowed gracefully behind him as he walked, the Anunnaki towered head and shoulder above the Eridu guard that accompanied him. He did not move quickly, yet because of his height, he covered a lot of ground, forcing the guard to nearly jog to keep up. Even the tallest man in Kurgal didn't grow to the height of an Anunnaki's shoulders. A heavy gold medallion bounced lightly on his chest as he approached. It was carved with the symbol of ocean waves and dangled from a thick, glass-like chain that hung from his neck. Almost all the Anunnaki Namzu had ever seen wore one just like it. But the most notable aspect of Namzu's visual scrutiny laid in the Anunnaki's physical features. Large, dark almond eyes complemented the refined facial features of an elongated skull covered by long hair that was more yellow than it was blonde, and blue-tinted pale skin that covered the whole of his body. He was directed to the kitchen, where Namzu waited, fascinated by the unusual creature as much as any of them. After dismissing the guards with him, Namzu bowed respectfully to the Anunnaki.
"Thank you for honoring my summons, wise one. My name is Namzu, High Priest of the Judicial Order, and humble servant of Enki."
"I am Feruli Anreg, of the Yellow Hall. Please, call me Ferulian. I believe your proper title is First Ushgadi in your tongue, yes?"
"It is.
just as we speak of you as the Abgal.
It was a sincere sign of respect that the Anunnaki recognized his position, and Namzu would not forget it. Ferulean leaned close to Namzu and spoke softly.
If what your guardsmen spoke about is true, then I would like to see these symbols on the wall. Please, take me to them.
Of course, Abgal Ferulean. Please, follow me.
Namzu led the Anunnaki upstairs to where the bodies still lay. He was irritated that the guard had such a loose tongue with the Abgal. Rumors would be flying all over Eridu before the day was out. He made a mental note to have the guard beaten for his carelessness. Tales of murder could be dangerous, more so when the killer was still on the loose, and his own men should know better. Even before they reached the room, Namzu was compelled to hold the linen over his nose again. The stench had grown even worse, but the Wise One didn't seem to notice. Instead, he gazed beyond Namzu from the hall and into the room. His eyes were affixed to the strange symbols written on the walls.
Why do they do this?
The Anunnaki spoke aloud.
I do not understand, Abgal,
Namzu replied humbly. The Anunnaki tore his eyes from the room and focused on Namzu.
This is a terrible thing to happen in Eridu. I will help you as best I can with the answers you seek.
Thank you, Abgal. It is my hope that you may apply your wisdom to helping me understand the significance of those symbols. I feel certain they have a meaning, but as to what, I fall short with an explanation.
In all his years as first Ushgadi, this was the first time Namzu had requested an Anunnaki to assist in an investigation. He hadn't been sure the Anunnaki would come. Of course, he knew well of their kind from the Ziggurat, the Tower of Tongs, and the occasional sightings around Eridu, but only the Sangha and En had regular contact with any of them. Namzu had to admit that he was intimidated by the unusual man before him.
How many died in this room?
Ferulean asked, as if the bodies on the floor were not answer enough.
Two,
Namzu replied while he watched the Abgal study the bloody contents of the room.
A man and a woman visiting from Larak in the north.
Were there more that died in this fashion before them?
The Abgal asked.
Yes. There were seven others in this same inn,
Namzu confirmed. Ferulean studied the symbols on the wall again.
Were there similar writings on the wall in their rooms?
Yes, Abgal. Some of them the same, and others are different. I have the sketches on these tablets here.
Namzu fetched the sketches of the symbols on the clay tablets he had stored in his side pack and handed them to the Abgal. The Anunnaki looked them over briefly before returning them to Namzu.
Do you have any idea who might have caused these deaths?
Namzu related the night's events regarding the innkeeper and his resistance to being questioned further.
I believe he was the sole person involved in these murders. To what end, I still don't know. I can only speculate that he had a sickness of some sort. Except for those symbols, the crime would be a simple matter of reasoning.
The Anunnaki looked Namzu intently in the eye.
Where is the body of this man now?
Namzu desperately wanted to tear his gaze away from the Anunnaki's, but forced himself to hold fast.
He's in the hall of Kernugia by now. We have sent a report to the Sangha, who will most certainly wish to visit the remains himself to ensure there is no pestilence the citizens of Eridu need be concerned of.
He felt sweat forming on his brow, and briefly wondered why.
There is no pestilence, but there is great danger if this man yet lives,
the Abgal warned.
Please, let me know immediately if this is not the case.
As the Anunnaki turned to leave, Namzu quickly asked,
Will you enlighten me regarding the symbols left on the walls?
Frowning deeply, Abgal Ferulean's penetrating gaze studied Namzu carefully before he spoke.
Knowledge of this sort may be dangerous to your kind. Are you sure you wish to know?
I do,
Namzu replied firmly. He had to know. Taking Namzu by the elbow, the Abgal moved back to the doorway where they could get a clear view of the symbols on the opposite wall.
The first symbol represents the phrase, Kauska Tuat sinila pambat. This land bleeds unto me.
Namzu felt a chill run up his spine at the strange guttural language the Anunnaki spoke, while he wrote the translations in cuneiform next to the matching symbols he had drawn on his clay tablet. It sounded the same as the way the innkeeper spoke before he died.
The second symbol represents the phrase Unal sagiga no asmi con okob. These people, let them become servants.
Sagiga, Namzu replied. It specifically says sagiga.
It does.
Ferulean was watching him closely, as if he half expected Namzu to figure it all out right then.
Sagiga is our native word for a citizen of Kurgal, free or slave.
Namzu was perplexed.
So then the message specifically references our people?
Yes.
I see.
The revelation felt deeply meaningful to Namzu, but he couldn't say why.
Please continue, Abgal.
The third symbol represents Akonokob Biab Ozien Di Bogpa. The servants are mine to rule. And the fourth, Zin Kerez. I am here.
Without another word, the Abgal abruptly turned from the doorway and walked towards the stairway.
Abgal Ferulean, Namzu called after him. What language is that you spoke?
The vernacular of gods and demons.
Ferulean replied over his shoulder without slowing his pace and disappeared down the stairs before Namzu could say another word.
Gods and demons.
That implied they shared a common language. More importantly, what madman would know such a thing to write them on a wall of an inn? None of it made sense. Namzu remained to stare at the symbols for a long while before he too made his way out of the inn. The fetid smell from the room lingered in his nostrils for a time after he departed, but the images he would carry in his mind forever. If Namzu couldn't decide before, he knew now the sight of death was the worst. But none of that mattered now. The memory of those final symbols and the chilling words the Anunnaki left him with dominated his thoughts, and what they could mean for the future of Eridu. Zin Kerez. I am here.